Live from Los Angeles, it's the at-home edition of the Life
Look Change. Out the bright lights. Look out the bright lights. We'll
it's
be swimming when we fly.
Director of the Movie Foundation, President of the UN.
Look out the night sky. Look out the night sky. Where the stars have always shined.
Our MC of If I've said it once, I've said it maybe 607 times. I am excited about tonight's show, and tonight for many reasons: the guests, the conversation, and where I believe these conversations are going to take us, hopefully into the near future. So it's an exciting time, and we're going to get right to it. So I had one of these moments, actually, thanks to Mark LeJour, our producer and co-host, who said we should title this episode Developing Moral Technology. And when I heard him say those words, I thought, wow, how come I've never heard moral and technology going together? And then later on, as I was doing some research on our guest, I saw that she was talking about moral companies, or rather amoral companies. And I thought, why have I not heard those words together? It seems like a metric, it seems like a conversation that I would like to have had a long time ago as a way to describe, is this company doing what I believe is good for me, for the planet, for communities, for people? Is this company doing things that are only benefiting itself? And to be able to say, is this company moral? Is what this company doing moral, or is it amoral? Is this technology that is coming in or that we're using, is it moral or is it amoral? And I thought, wow, this opens up a whole different way of having a conversation. So by the time I got to talking with our guest, I started to realize that she is approaching all of this from a whole different angle, and it again blew my mind, and I can't wait to share with all of you some of what, from her words and her mouth, some of what I'm delighted to know and looking forward to knowing more about as far as developing moral technology is concerned. So right after this, we're going to be talking to our guest, Susan Manowich, and our musical guest, and I'll share more about her later, will be joining us, Kelly Rucker, all on the Life Changes Show at Home Edition right after this.
Have you felt inspired to meditate but you just can't? Do you suffer from anxiety but fidget toys just make you more fidgety? Want to replace negative self-talk in your head that keeps bringing you down? Introducing the latest self-help solution, Phi Beads. Transformational beaded jewelry inspired by ancient wisdom, science, math, and psychology. All Phi Beads are designed to incorporate the powerful Fibonacci sequence, nature's mathematical formula that has shaped our existence from the beginning of time. The Fibonacci sequence, also known as the golden mean or the golden ratio, is recognized by our conscious and unconscious mind and resonates as order out of chaos, like we see in plants, flowers, seashells, ocean waves, the pyramids, and in our own body. Not only beautiful, they feel good to wear. Phi Beads can help anchor tranquility, positivity, focus, and structure in your life by doing the Phi Meditation. Phi Meditation helps you harness the power of I Am, or intention, affirmation, and manifestation. Affirm the life you want. Get your set of Phi Beads at PhiBeads.com. That's Phi, P-H-I, Beads.com. You are listening to The Life Changes Show, live from Vortex Dome LA on the BBS Radio Network with your host, the Master of Change, Filippo Voltaggio. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows on our archive page at lifechangesshow.com, which include luminaries such as comedian Michael Collier, actress Gabriella Wright, performing artist James Hood, and author Ken Honda. Email your comments and questions to info@lifechangesnetwork.com or askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com. You can also comment via Twitter @LifeChangesShow and Facebook @TheLifeChangesShow.
We are back. I am Filippo Voltaggio online with, I should say, the master of words or wordsmithing, Mark Lejeune.
Wow, that's a new one. On the wordsmithing, I'm super excited for tonight's dialogue. What Susan's doing and what this planet needs are such a perfect match. And you know how close and passionate I am with new-to-the-world technologies. It's going to be a really, really relevant and exciting conversation.
You know, it's interesting that you put it that way, Mark, new to the world. Like, what world are we talking about? Is it new to this planet or new to this civilization or new to us? Maybe been around for a while?
See, all of the above.
Very good. And so for that, we're going to turn to our guest, who is president of New Energy Movement. And she's the director of the NUI Foundation, and so much more. Let's get started. Our guest is Susan A. Manowich, M.S. Welcome, Susan, to the show.
Oh, thank you. I actually pronounced my name correctly, too.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Me
and
too.
I hope everybody on our team heard that, because I don't know that that happens enough. So that being said, can I just tell you that I was just beaming after our last conversation because of how you said what you said and where you're coming from when you say it. So I've said that. Now what?
Well, our conversation went in a couple of different directions. So.
Oh gosh, yes.
How would you like to get started?
You know, all of it. And that's the thing I said to Susan. It's like, we've got 15 different ways we can go, and I do them all. And I feel like someday we'll go the next. But let's get started with, I'd love for people to know where you're coming from. And I have a question about it when you start to share that you remember or have a sense of deciding, this is fascinating to me, to come to be here on this planet for a reason.
Yes. So I do remember this, and I think people can see these different streams of what I call my pre-birth or preconception memories, and basically the path that I've taken here, that it was definitely, it was a mission and in a choice of an experience to have on this planet as well. So yes, I'm one of these people, and there's others, by the way, that remember pre-birth. Some people remember their near-death experience. I remember the preconception experience, and never really lost that. Even to this day, it's pretty clear. So, yeah. So for me, coming into being like incarnating, actually in my mother's womb and being in her womb, I remember that. And some people remember being physically born. I don't remember being physically born. I just remember preconception and conception and being in the womb. And so for me, I was born here knowing that these subtle realms where I've come from, which all of us come from, some of us just have a little bit more of a clearer connective memory of that than others. So for me, bringing in consciousness, awareness, these subtle realms, and technology that's in alignment with nature is just a very natural thing for us to do. If anything, you know, as a kid and as an adult, when you see things that are not harmonious in your environment that are man-made, you know, there's a bit of a, ugh, what's that? And, you know, it feels strange and it feels odd. So, yeah, there's a little bit that I do remember that I brought with me through.
And we're going to get into that in just a moment. But here's the big question that was ringing in my mind is, was there fine print and did you read it? Before you said, okay, I'll go down there. Like, you know, it's going to be hard or people are not going to get it. Or, you know, sometimes you're going to forget and going to go, what, you know?
Like, oh, hey, listen, all I can say is I was, and this is the God's honest truth. So every single time that I complain about being here and have hardships and, you know, get frustrated and get upset because those things do still happen, I sit there and go, why was I so enthusiastic about coming? I mean, like, this is no exaggeration. I was, you know, like, if there's such a thing and when you're in, like, this etheric body to be completely over the moon excited about, like, oh, my God, I get to leave. I get to go. This is incredible. I mean, that was the feeling I got, was like, yes, of course, we're going to go. And you know, here I am. And I think I told you this on our phone call, that when I ended up being in my mother's womb, I think it was probably around 7 months in utero. That was like what my little body felt like in her womb. I remember hearing my brothers and my sister, because I was the youngest of five, and I heard like all this chaos, and I rolled my eyes in the womb, and I'm like, oh my God, not this place again. I mean, that's exactly the truth. So to answer your question, I totally missed the fine print.
That answers my question, and I feel better.
Yeah, I totally missed that.
Well, you know, I don't know that anybody would have expected us to go there at the top of this conversation, but I thought it was relevant to where this sense of developing moral technology kind of is rooted. Like, you came with a mission, and now you're in your field. You lead conscious development and emotional intelligence. You bring all this in. So let's talk about how and where that applies briefly.
Oh boy, it applies everywhere.
Briefly. Yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean, it does. It obviously applies everywhere from, let's just speak about emotional intelligence for a moment, because I did have a professional career in EI and actually worked with the creators of this. They weren't the people that popularized it. That was done by Dan Goleman, but the people that created EI were academics and at Yale University, but also at University of New Hampshire. And I was blessed and able to work with David Caruso, who, again, is one of those creators. But the emotional intelligence piece is really important because, you know, this is where it does relate to consciousness. So obviously being able to be aware of your emotions, of other people's emotions, to understand how emotion is impacting thinking, impacting your behavior, looking at optimum outcomes. I mean, really being able to, you know, what we call keep the ego in check. I mean, you know, to me, that's like, that's consciousness 101, is making sure that you've got a balance between what you're feeling and what you're thinking and your behavior. And, you know, this is something, I mean, as we can see, look at our world today. You know, there's so much that's reactionary. And as we know, you know, when your amygdala gets hijacked, you're operating from a fear-based standpoint. And, you know, typically that doesn't typically serve well in the vast majority of environments. Sometimes it does, but the vast majority of times in social settings, it really doesn't work out so well. So, you know, that's a large part of being able to identify where people are coming from. If we want to move, as we always talk about, towards higher consciousness, and what does that mean? Is that, you know, the mind of God? Is that these subtle realms? You know, we can say whatever, mm-hmm. you know, we want to classify it, but there is this sense of when you're in higher consciousness, when you're operating from, you know, quote unquote, that mind of God, that you are in a space that doesn't have disconnection, and it doesn't have fear, and it doesn't have anger, it doesn't have hate, it doesn't have jealousy, it doesn't have those characteristics of it. So if you're operating in that state, you know, one can say, well, this is higher consciousness. So there does appear to be what I call moral impulses. And I want to tell a quick little story, because this relates to my colleague and I, who started NUI, the Foundation for Moral Technology, as we call it. He was working, doing what I would call over unity technology in the environment that he was in. And we had met, of course, through synchronicities, as everything seems to go these days in this arena. Mm-hmm. And I was sharing with him some of my experiences and my approach to this arena, because I felt like I was kind of holding a torch that you know, was very a lonely torch, I would say. And I was explaining to him, you know, some of my experiences and what my approach to this is, and what I was thinking in regards to it. And he said, "My goodness, it sounds like you're talking about everything I've read regarding moral technology from Rudolf Steiner." Mm. So there led to this incredible friendship, this incredible union of his skills and knowledge and expertise. And also, he's a trained engineer, previously worked with the British Ministry of Defense. So, you know, he's got some legit credentials. And then you've got myself with the EI training, leadership, OD stuff, and the consciousness research in some unique areas, which I'd love to chat about as well. You know, so we really brought that together to try to approach this arena of new energy technology in a different way. Mm. As opposed to the way that, you know, it was pretty much being dealt with before, which was basically hardcore, you know, what I call inventor, device, money, investor. And, you know, you get this dynamic, which is, you know, what we now refer to as pretty much old school relationships. And so we really wanted to say, well, what happens when you create a different ecosystem where you're actually putting the life force first? You're approaching this in a very different, unique way, where you're actually honoring the life force of the human beings that are working in this, the environment of it, and also from, you know, the financial ecosystem. When you're actually working this in a different way, how does this then look? Mm. So it's, you know, it's still a work in progress. This whole thing, I think this whole shift on the planet is a work in progress right now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's a little bit about how and why we started what we did and how EI relates to it, because you have to have that sensitivity and an awareness of these subtle realms to know, you know, how people are behaving and what they're attracting and you know, what type of boundary conditions people are putting up. Because, you know, some of the engineers and some of the scientists will tell you that there's life force, you know, that is in these technologies that is attracted to even producing some of this technology. So, you know, being mindful of it. And I would say some of the most talented ones have a deep respect and a deep appreciation for what's being generated. It's almost like they're seeing it, they're feeling it, they're acknowledging it, that it's alive. And again, that relates to some of the research that I helped to publish in 2018.
And yeah, actually, I'd like to get into what some of what you have published when we come back from you have a book out, but I just do want to let everybody know that newenergymovement.com and is it .com?
Yeah. Yes.
And then Hidden Energy is .com, and then the NUI Foundation is .org, right?
I believe so.
Okay. You know what? Actually, I put the links on our website, and they're there at lifechangershow.com. If you just look up Susan Manowich, and it's just so fascinating what she has there. We're going to come back to some more of that fascinating. And in our next segment, or not in our next segment, but later in the show, Kelly Rucker will be joining us with live music, all on the Life Changes Show, right after this.
Want to connect with amazing people who are committed to making a difference? From the Heart Tribe is a platform, community, and movement with the purpose of bringing like-minded humans together to help animals and the environment in order to gain a stronger connection and understanding of the world around us. They are dedicated to effectuating positive change by empowering individuals to organize meaningful and engaging experiences that build compassion for animals and the natural environment. Their founders and members' passion is to inspire others to actively get involved in their homes, their communities, and the world to raise awareness about the issues we face and, most of all, to be part of the solution. Through their efforts, they have also accomplished some amazing and tangible achievements. Their Pickup for Paradise beach cleanups have collected over 50,000 pieces of foreign debris. And also, thanks to animal rescue and recovery volunteers, over 30% of the volunteers have become vegan or reduced their meat intake. Daily habits make a big difference. Please join any of their upcoming events by going to fthtt.org and signing up for their newsletter. You can also follow on Instagram and Facebook at From the Heart Tribe. You are listening to The Life Changes Show, live from Vortex Dome LA on the BBS Radio Network with our host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include influencers such as author Ariel Ford, business luminary Nolan Bushnell, and actress Dee Wallace on our archive page at lifechangesshow.com. Please send any comments or questions to info@lifechangesnetwork.com or via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We are back. I am Filippo, and our guest is Susan A. Manowich. Susan, what does MS stand for?
That's a Master of Science. Since I'm not a PhD, I figured, well, you know, I got a Master of Science and did it while I was pregnant and had a baby. So
I should know that. Well, she's currently, she works to bring ethics, integrity, and cohesion to the field of new energy, actually to a lot of things. But, you know, you mentioned, and I love how you did this, you said legit people and legit scientists. Your book talks about so many people that are working on all of this stuff that like Mark was saying earlier, technology that we're not aware of yet. So Hidden Energy is the book, right? Tell us about these legit things going on in the background.
Yeah, so Hidden Energy, it came out in 2019, so September, and it took a couple of years to write. So Gene Manning and myself contributed to the book. Gene is the lead writer on this, and she's got somewhat of a 30 years of experience doing writing in this field. So basically taking Jean's experience and her knowledge of the different inventors throughout the years, and then taking mine and marrying that up in this book is something that we also did for lay people. We wanted to be able to make this readable for everybody, that you didn't need to be, you know, a scientist, an engineer, or a tech person to understand this and to find it interesting. So it features stories of the different inventors, citizen scientists. I mean, you know, you've got inventors that are trained in NASA. You've got PhDs. You've got garage inventors. You've got people that have had downloads throughout their life as well that are in this book. And what you're going to find is there's a lot of commonalities in terms of I would say, what's the big commonality? The big commonality is that there seems to be a sea of energy around us that they understand and that they have been tasked to learn how to tap into. And there's also some other aspects of the book in regards to astrophysics, and not complicated. It's just, I would say, people's different theories about, well, how is all of this possible? You know, this is not something that we've been been trained from being in school that is real, that exists. So, you know, what are these other academics and what are these other people who, again, have weighted credibility, you know, how do they think that these things are possible? So that's a little bit about the book, and it goes into the, you know, you what you find also is that different inventors will approach the technologies from you know, their different viewpoints. So, you know, it doesn't seem like there's one way that we tap into this field. That's the cool part, that there's multiple ways that you can tap into working with these different energy technologies. And by the way, that the term overunity just basically means that you're getting more power out than you're putting in. And I kind of equate that, you know, from, I would say, from nature. You know, you have an apple, and that's one apple, but there's multiple seeds inside of the apple. And, you know, that's a very interesting way to look look at this. And, you know, this is also technology that is in alignment with nature. And as we see, most of the technology that we have that's out there, you know, and to power, you know, your home and and whatnot, is taking resources and not being very useful with them, and it's certainly not being in alignment with nature. I mean, we're extracting without this regeneration of putting anything back in, and it really does seem that, you know, this is the crescendo point that we're at this moment. I mean, we're at a huge crescendo, as we all know, and you know, people that are on this call and people that are listening, and you know, what we're continually being shown from nature is, you don't have to live this way. You don't have to live in this lack mentality. If you learn how to switch the narrative around and actually see that you live on an abundant planet with abundant resources, with abundant energy that you can participate in. And again, that goes to some of the research as well. So that's a little bit about the book.
Well, it's a little bit about a lot, actually. And I love how you're using words and phrases, and you say, we always like to say, and I like to think that in your world and the people that you associate with, you always do talk like that. But for many, many, many people, this is very, very, very foreign. And so I'm wondering, just like when I heard moral technology, like, wow, okay. So starting to shift that conversation, your analogy of the apple was awesome, by the way, and I get it more and more with the free energy and all that, makes more sense. How would we, in our day in and day out basis, start to shift from morality, which was maybe more religious based, where if I have sex with that person and I'm married or she, you know, that kind of thing, to if I throw this away in this way, or if I treat somebody in business this way, like, how can we start, where can we start in our homes, in our lives, in our families?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I think, you know, the term morality has had probably, you know, just thinking about this right now, like at this colonial kind of interpretation to it. And I don't believe that, you know, we mean it this way. That let me give you an example before talking about how you can utilize this in your home or yourself on a day-to-day basis. So, when discussing energy in general, let's say, you know, if you meditate, right, or if you have some type of profound spiritual experience, typically it involves a movement of energy. And typically it involves something that feels benevolent to it. And so when speaking with a good friend of mine who works, he's an engineer that works on these technologies, but he's also been meditating for like 40 years. And he talked about microvita. And I said, well, can you explain what microvita is? He said, well, that's a mini life force, and it's conscious, and it has a moral impulse to it. So when we think about like the creation of the universe, for example, that if we're all part of the universe, that there is a moral impulse in every bit of this life force, right? So this life force that's around us, this life force that's in the cosmos, this life force that's in nature, but it's also in us as well. And so a simple way to think about that is that it's giving, it's not taking, it's giving, and you're feeling more full. You know, it's kind of like the sense of you know, feeling euphoric or feeling happy or feeling love, right? Like there's this sense when you feel love, you feel a connective flow. You feel that you are one with many things around you, if not all the things that are around you. And so it's as simple as that. You know, to me, that morality, like that moral impulse, is actually feeling that sense of connection. It's feeling that sense of love, and it's feeling that sense of evolution as well. I think that there's an evolutionary component to these moral impulses. So, you know, that would be a simple way that you know, I would express that. It's you know, so I'm not going to sit here and tout, you know, how we can all be moral, but it's simply saying, you know, if something is life-giving, you're acknowledging that life force and it's life-giving versus life-taking. You know, you know that if you're taking and taking and taking and not giving, things become out of balance, that there's a balance here that is really asking to be maintained. And if that balance is not there, then, you know, the system goes out of whack. Just like if you have a virus in your body, you know, your temperature goes up because it's trying to fight the virus, you know, to get it out. So, you know, there's this imbalance that's created.
You know, Susan, thank you for that. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, you're in just having this conversation. You were saying that people can remember somehow because it's in our DNA. So as a last bit of calling to mind or calling to our consciousness, remembering, when we come back, let's touch on that. And I wish there was time to touch on so much more. Susan has also been a contributing author on so many other books and papers, as she said, including such interesting chapters she's written in The Earth as Goddess and in The Mystery of Woman by Gabrielle Morris. So the conversation is one that hopefully will grow from here on this show and other shows and in many books and much more to come with our guest Susan A. Menowich. And a little later on, we're going to have Kelly Rucker on the show. And in our next segment, we also have our Ask Dorothy question, all on the Life Changes Show At Home Edition, right after this.
The Little Dog That Could is the fantastically true story of a man and a little dog that came into his life as his mentor to help him understand the world beyond his human senses and to experience life, love, and healing beyond his human understanding. Best-selling author Filippo Voltaggio, who currently hosts the highly regarded Life Changes show, is an internationally known singer, speaker, and life coach. Filippo offers up his own story, how one little surprise package in fur and four legs transformed his life unexpectedly forever and furthered his path of self-discovery. In The Little Dog That Could, Filippo brings to life the meaning of the adage, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Through the reading of this book, you will experience the journey of real miracles that transcend time, space, and logic while gaining practical tools that will help you navigate your way. The Little Dog That Could is available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. For more information, visit thelittledogthatcould.com. That's thelittledogthatcould.com.
You are listening to the Life Changes Show, live from Vortex Dome LA, with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online at lifechangesshow.com, via Twitter at Life Changes Show, and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We are back. I am Filippo, and our guest is Susan Menowich. And Susan, We just started this conversation, and yet for now it has to come to an end. But in this conversation, I am remembering something that you said that we can remember, that this is natural to us. It's in our DNA. What exactly do we hope to have awakened through these conversations?
Yeah, I want to say this because I feel that the fact that I remember that there's a purpose for it, that there's a resonance. I think that we're all supposed to remember, and I think that these earth changes that we're experiencing, because they are happening. You know, we've got a waning magnetosphere. We've got the sun that is going to go into a pretty active phase soon. And, you know, these times have been predicted that we're in right now. So I think we're going to remember more. And, you know, that to not be scared of that. If people are seeing more of these subtle realms, or if they're seeing energy, or if they're feeling this sense of, you know, this great connection or this great compassion, that this is just part of this shift. And so, you know, the remembering is actually remembering that, you know, we have a density life here on Earth as well, but we also have this eternal life. It's both, and it is the one. And so I think that more of us are beginning to remember, and I think that this is happening fast and furious as well. So to me, you know, what used to be these exotic technologies, I think that this is going to be something that people go, oh yeah, you know, this is, I know what this is. I don't remember how I know it, but I know that this is actually more normal than not. And I think we're going to see more of that. And, you know, that's something that you asked Mark early in the show, you know, is this new? Is this old? And Mark said, well, it's a little bit of both. And I think that's right on target.
And we want this, and this is good for us, and this is good for all of us, kind of thing.
Well, absolutely. And again, you know, just looking at the research that's in the book that was published with Dr. John Climo, Dr. Rudy Shield, and as part of the Edgar Mitchell Institute with Ray Hernandez, is you know, the basis of all of this. And when you look at where we're headed, the consciousness education piece, learning about the nature of the universe, learning about how to create these devices that are, again, in alignment with nature and in alignment with the cosmos. This is what we're being asked to. This is what we're being asked to do. And just, you know, really quickly, we know that our planet right now is experiencing the highest amount of cosmic rays, very, very high. That can make things pretty nasty in terms of, you know, die-off of species, but it can also produce spontaneous evolution. And we are being guided, and we have been guided, and we're going to be guided more through this shift, because it does appear that we're at this precipice of this massive pop in evolution, and that may seem totally counterintuitive to everything that's going on in the dominant culture right now. But as we know, when something is being squeezed, you know, so hard, there's a great probability that something absolutely remarkable is going to birth from that. And so when you take what's happening now in the dominant culture, you take these earth changes, and then you take basically what these people are doing that are working on these different technologies in a different way. And it's not just the tech. There's new life sciences that are, you know, in the process of being being worked on as well, that's in alignment with more, you know, plant and natural and, you know, more of nature's dynamics. You realize that you know, this is what the ancients have said, you know, that this time is coming. And it really does appear that we are here with it right now.
Wow. And I am so glad that you've been here with us right now. This has been a pleasure connecting with you and sharing your wisdom on the show. And again, looking forward to more. And in the meantime, people can go to our website and learn about even some of the things that we didn't get to talk about, like Nui Foundation, but of course, New Energy Movement, and we didn't get to talk about CCRI.
Oh yeah, that's okay. Next time, guys.
Okay. Yes. Okay. And the book Hidden Energy. Gosh, Susan, thank you so much. What a pleasure.
Thank you, Filippo. Thank you, Mark.
All the best. Until next time. And with that, we have our Ask Dorothy question.
Dear Dorothy, this is Monica in Missouri, and I'm grateful for your assistance with my twisted ankle 2 weeks ago. I am so happy that I live in a small town in the country and not in a big city. As I've discussed with you in the past, the highlight of my day is a two-hour walk in the woods where I look for elk and deer and other wonderful creatures. Even though my ankle isn't 100% yet, I just couldn't stay away from the woods, and yesterday I got so excited when I spotted a large elk that somehow I lost my footing and fell and really hurt my left ear, twisted my ankle again, and hurt my left knee, shoulder, and hip. As you have suggested, I've looked up the emotional causes for each injury and doing the affirmations as requested. I have been doing these kinds of walks forever, and now it seems I can't go without some kind of accident. Please help me understand what is going on.
Dear Monica, I am happy that you've been doing the emotional causes work, as that will help you heal more quickly. And I have to ask if you've looked up the emotional causes of accidents in general, as that could be an important piece of the puzzle. In Louise Hay's book, You Can Heal Your Life, she states that the probable emotional cause of accidents is inability to speak up for the self, rebellion against authority, and belief in violence. The new thought pattern she gives is this: I release the pattern in me that created this. I am at peace. I am worthwhile. I urge you to examine the probable emotional causes and see how or if it fits your present state of mind. From our conversations and correspondence, I can clearly see that you feel unable to speak up for yourself in your present job. I also see that you have strong emotions concerning the big bosses. So please remember that these thoughts and emotions can be triggers and possibly be the cause of your accidents. As I have discussed with you before, I am an excellent example of how our thoughts and emotional states can affect our lives. I had accident after accident after accident, and it wasn't until many years after the last one that I began to understand how my emotional state had been the root cause of so many accidents and injuries. So please be willing to change your thoughts and your emotions and feelings so you can live a pain-free life. And let's remember that being grateful for your job right now when so many are out of work will help you change your thoughts and emotions. As is everything in life, your job is temporary. And instead of being upset with it, take those moments of despair and use them to change your thoughts and focus on co-creating the future you desire.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at AskDorothy@LifeChangesShow.com.
And we'll be right back with our musical guest, Kelly Rucker, just right after this.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening, someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
Life Changes Show is a premier radio show presented by the Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people, celebrities, corporate giants, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart, integrity, and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your lives through the Life Changes Show, lifechangesnetwork.com, and through guest appearances on other inspiring shows and events. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching, a private consultation with one of us, corporate or live event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, please email us at info@lifechangesnetwork.com.
We're back. I am Filippo, and our musical guest is a singer, songwriter, harmonica player, and recording artist, and so much more. Welcome, Kelly Rucker, to the Life Changes Show.
Hello. Hello, hello, ciao.
Hello, hello. You know, actually, one of the songs you're going to sing is My Own Little World. And, you know, our world just keeps getting bigger. Like, it feels like it just got bigger, didn't
it? Not to me.
Oh, you see it another way.
You mean what's happening in the world right now?
No, like what, you know, the conversations we're having, they're expanding. It feels expanding.
Absolutely. Like the ever expanding universe. It's wonderful.
And yet in our world, things like you and I meeting, thanks to Chef Richard Lombardi at Priscilla's, like a decade ago or maybe 12 years ago or so. And it's interesting that that happened then. And then you were in the middle of writing some songs, which we're going to hear tonight. But you said to me when I connected with you recently, you said, I was just thinking, I wish I could be in Priscilla's writing more songs, right? Something like that?
In fact, I was thinking, okay, I need to, I work well when I sequester myself or, you know, sequester myself out in the world, which sounds funny, but when I do that, and so I would go and park myself at Priscilla's and just sort of stare off into space until something happened. And then I have this new record to write, and I thought, geez, I wish I could go back to Priscilla's and just sit there.
And you're currently about as far from Priscilla's in the United States that you could be in Florida, right? And out of the blue, Filippo calls you the guy you met at Priscilla's.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? Well, but it's not amazing. It's just how things work. If you stay open, I think you just sort of, it's the law of attraction or whatever you want to call it. But things do happen that way a lot.
Nice. Yes, absolutely. And so too with this conversation, I saw what you wrote to Susan. You said, I think I got some lyrics out of that conversation.
Like, for example, exotic technology, waning magnetosphere. Oh, my God. I love it.
Oh, my gosh. I can't wait to hear how that is used in a song. Like, can't wait. And speaking of which, you and I stayed friends after that, and while you were in California, got to see each other, and now you've been away. But you've traveled a lot, even when you were out here, to all kinds of countries. You're popular in so many places, you and your music, and especially in Italy. What is you and your love affair with Italy?
Because it's just, the food is fabulous. I mean, it's not even just a food. It's hard to describe. It's just so much more fresh and so much cleaner than in the USA, because I think that they've paid attention to it for so much longer than we have, and taken that seriously. And organic there, I think, means something different than organic here. Asked some scientists about that. I was mulling that over the other day, but just the lifestyle. You just walk to the little grocery store and get your little stuff for a couple of days, maybe, and learn to just slow down and be patient and listen and just walk and, you know, enjoy taking time in doing things. And I just learned how to chill out there, you know, and America really learned how to do that.
And I know they love your music there. I've seen some articles in Italian about you and your music, and that's very, very exciting to read in Italian. Like, that's my friend. So you were in the process of writing an album, and we're going to do something different, and we're actually going to play a clip from the album, or the whole song, actually, which we rarely ever do. But this is the moment where things are different. So what is My Own Little World about?
Oh, I was working. Actually, I didn't write that one when I met you. I was working on something else. But that one kind of came about in an interesting way. I was working at Bob Dylan's publishing company, and I would stand there in front of this, in this little closet where there were these filing cabinets full of lyrics and lead sheets, and just absorb all the energy that was there, which is thousands of songs in these file cabinets. And that just came to me. And, you know, it's about this old guy that has lived a long life, and he's just discovered the value of simplicity. And I'll let you.
Nice. Okay. We're get to hear from, what's the album called?
That one's called, let's see, which one was that one on? That's the first one. That was the first record, which was called Ain't Hit Bottom.
Ain't Hit Bottom. Wow. Okay. Well, here from Ain't Hit Bottom is Kelly Rucker performing My Own Little World.
I live in a field at the edge of the woods, beyond the end of the road. I fly in my dreams in my own little world, all right. I'm as old as the hills, I bend in the wind, smooth as a stone in a riverbed. In time, it flows like water.
Nothing to do but dance in the moon tonight. Wow, what an image. Thank you so much, Kelly Rucker. Good on you.
I like that one.
I like that one too. And if you like what you're hearing, go to Facebook, look up Kelly Rucker, K-E-L-L-I-E Rucker, R-U-C-K-E-R. But you'll find articles and other links and a video. If you go to lifechangeshow.com and find her there. Kelly, you are known as a singer, but your harmonica work has been featured in like movies, commercials, and other people's albums and all of that. I mean, how did you Like, when did you start with harmonica?
Well, in the penitentiary. No, just kidding. No, I was never in the penitentiary. My big brother played, and I wanted to be like him. So he was very clever, and he still is very clever. But he would make up little songs and play harmonica, and then one day he just handed it to me. And I was, I don't know, 12 years old, and we were making ice cream by the side of the house, and he was playing a little song, and that's when I just started. And then I started listening to Magic Dick and all these guys, you know, and thought that that was the thing to do. And I actually played guitar for a long time, and I put it down because everybody plays guitar, and I didn't want something between me and the world. You know, you were holding a guitar, and it's this big thing in front of you. So it just didn't work. I'm tiny. I'm like 5 feet tall. So when I hold a guitar in front of me, it just sort of obliterates me completely. So, and there are lots of really brilliant guitar players. So I thought, why not try to do something a little different?
You know, you're very clever as well. I know you personally, and you and I have had all kinds of fascinating conversations, and fashion and design and all kinds of stuff. So you are very clever. And you know what? I read that about you being 5 foot something in the, and I never remembered that about you. I never thought, oh, she's small or she's short. Never, ever. Oh, she's tiny. Never. I'm like, wait a minute. Are we talking about the same person? So there's your personality for you.
Well, yes. I don't really feel small unless I'm either in a crowd or next to a big horse.
Okay, good. So the next song we're going to hear is called Elysium. Where is that?
That's the mythological, like a Valhalla kind of thing in Greek mythology. And I wrote that one with John Butcher, who's a very good old friend of mine. And he was, the way I write is I usually collaborate with somebody and they'll just, you know, like bang out some little tidbits on guitar and, you know, start sort of humming something or whatever. And I'll say, oh, I like that. Or I like that, you know, and he was going, I don't know why he did that, but I thought, oh, okay, that would be fun. So I looked up all the mythology, and there you go.
And there it was. So is it from Ain't Hit Bottom, Church of Texas, Soul Return, or Dixie Frog Records? Or on Dixie
Frog
is the record album. I mean, is the company.
Texas.
Okay. So, from Church of Texas, we're going to hear Elysium. Here is Kelly Rucker singing and her famous harmonica, all on the Life Changes Show at Home Edition.
Help me pick the golden
Kelly Rucker and Elysium. And Kelly, I said, your famous harmonica. Did I miss the harmonica?
Well, actually, there's no harmonica on that song.
I've listened to so many of your songs lately, and I just thought for sure it's in here too. Okay. Well,
about music is sometimes just leave it out if it doesn't call for it.
It's like a spice. I get it. Well, people will have to go and go hear some of your songs, follow you. You're on YouTube and all over the place. And go see you in Italy or wherever else you're going to be as soon as we're all going to be able to travel and go see each other and perform as well. Kelly, what a pleasure to have you on. Find her, Kelly, that's with an I-E, Rucker, R-U-C-K-E-R. Find her on Facebook. And again, we have a lot of information of her on the Life Changes show. Kelly, it felt like we got to spend some time together.
Happy to reconnect with you, and I really appreciate being here.
It's our pleasure, my pleasure as well. So a big thank you to Kelly Rucker, and again to Susan Manowich. And that's our show tonight. I loved it. And with that, on behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our producer and co-host, Mark Leger, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.